Welcome to the Chasing Passion podcast. My name is Dom and I'm your host. Each week I bring on a passionate person to help you discover your own passion in life and how to begin pursuing it. Thanks for spending some time with me today and let the episode begin. In this episode we are joined by Joe O'Ribbean. He's currently a computer science student in NUIG and although he's quite young, he's achieved many things already, particularly in the academic field. In this episode, we discuss the blueprint that led him to great academic success. But before I get into that, I would like to mention some of his achievements. He achieved 10 A's in the Junior Cert, 6 H1s and 1 H2 in the Leaving Cert. And just to provide some context, H1 is the highest grade he can receive for a single subject within the Leaving Cert. He has won several scholarships, including the Naughton Scholarship, the J.P. McManus All-Ireland Scholarship and also the NUIG Academic Achievement Scholarship. He was selected to take part in European Science Olympiad and was also the key figure in starting LocalCoder.io. And to top it all off, he received an internship after his first years of studies. In this episode, we talk about what his process is to achieve such results, some of the study techniques that he used in the past, and how your mindset affects your learning. And without further ado, let's get right into the episode. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Dom. How's the crack?
Crack is good. Crack is good. So I guess I'll kick off the podcast by asking you, what's your background? Who are you? What do you do? And
well,
what are you involved in?
My name's Joe. I'm from Galway originally, but I'm living up in Dublin for the summer because I'm working as a data analytics intern in AIB. So I study computer science in NUI Galway, and that's kind of where I am to this point, finishing up now in how many days? 4?
So,
that's basically me. That's my background.
That's cool. And, you know, the reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast was because I found out that you achieved very good results in your Leaving Cert.
I didn't do too badly.
You didn't do too badly. And I wanted to know how you approached it. Like, what are your kind of techniques in, you know, learning material? But before we get into that, I'd like to ask, like, what are you motivated by?
What am I motivated by? Well, the thing is, as a person, I tend to change my mind quite a bit. I never really know like where definitively I want to be at times. So I kind of view the reason I was so motivated in school was because I just wanted to have as many options open as possible. So that was like, I mean, there was many points in school where I wanted to be a doctor. And I always kind of kept on the back burner. I was never 100% sure if that wasn't the thing I wanted to do, because I was kind of always afraid of, you know, the HPAT. So that was always kind of a deterrent. But that's what motivated me to study. Like, in terms of life, well, I mean, you know, I view money as kind of a facilitator, you know. And I believe by doing a job that you love and that pays well, you create as many opportunities for yourself as you possibly can. So that's the reason for that.
Yeah, fair. And you also mentioned that you wanted to do medicine.
Yes.
In college. And at the moment you're studying computer science in NUIG. So there are two different fields, and
completely.
I'm curious to know what drew you towards medical or medicine in general.
Well, from an early age, I just was fascinated by all kinds of science, particularly biology. I just adored it, and I mean, I'd read about diseases and microbiology and all that kind of stuff in my spare time. So, and as well as I was sick when I was younger as well, I had a chronic asthma. I was always just really inspired by how the doctors were just fit to always, you know, bring me back to good health, you know?
Yeah.
So that was the main reason why I was motivated to go for medicine for the first while anyway. As well as that, people used to always kind of say, oh, Joe, you'll be a doctor yet and all of this kind of stuff. But like, I don't know, perhaps it was just kind of other people saying it to me. I kind of felt expected to become a doctor. But anyway, we can see now that's not how things ended up working out.
And now you're currently studying computer science.
I am
indeed. So why did you choose computer science instead of medicine?
Well, as like, even though I was always very drawn to science and all of that when I was young, one thing I always was known to have an aptitude for was computers. I don't know why, but ever since, just from an early age, I was, you know, naturally competent on computers. You know, I was always the fella that people in my family had asked to help them set up their new phone, or, and as well as I was fascinated by the inner workings of computer, because it was almost like magic, you know. You had all, you could do so much on a computer, and it was all taking place inside a tiny box that nobody really knew what was going on inside. So I was really motivated to kind of, you know, break that down and see what was at work inside and understand the inner workings of a computer.
And then that led you to actually studying computer science.
Yeah, eventually. It's been a long road.
And do you regret the choice? Do you regret that you didn't take the choice to study medicine?
Not slightly.
Or are you happy?
Not slightly, so I don't.
And what do you love the most about computer science?
Well, the one thing I love about it is there's so many different parts to it. So, I mean, you have data analysis. That's what we do now. You have the software development aspect. You have the web development aspect. Like, I mean, there's enough in it to keep on learning. Like, you'll never know everything there is to know about computer science. Like, whether you're into it from the electricity side, or, you know, if you're really high level and you want to get involved in, like, neural networks and all of that. And as well as that, computers are so pivotal now to every industry. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I view it as a massive area of growth. I think there's so many exciting things happening in computer science at the minute that it's a great time to be getting involved in the industry.
And what do you think, what's happening in computer science that fascinates you at the moment?
Well, the main thing that, I mean, I just adore is artificial intelligence. I mean, I think we will reach a stage eventually where we can, for example, one area I was reading up about recently enough was, you know, content moderation. And I mean, you know, there's so many people working in that field now at the minute, and they're suffering severe post-traumatic stress disorder as a result. And, you know, I think it's great that things like that we can hand off to AI. I mean, a massive work has been done already in facilitating, you know, AI being able to recognize these gruesome images and all of that. And, you know, the fact that we can actually automate these unpleasant jobs, it's great. So it is.
And yeah, I think it's really cool. Like, you know, the way, like, in the future, maybe you'll just see autonomous cars just driving around.
Oh, yeah.
There will be no drivers. Like, all that kind of stuff is really cool.
Well, you know, even something as, like, stupid sounding as that app on your phone that can essentially coordinate an entire journey for you. From, like, let's say now, Sandyford in Dublin to Connemara. And the way it can, like, in a matter of seconds, figure out, okay, if you leave here now, you can get this bus, this train, that bus, and whatever else. And it'll sort it in seconds. Like, I mean, that's a manifestation of AI, you know? So I think things like that are the future.
Isn't that Google Maps already, though?
Well, yeah. But, like, I mean, I'm just saying find that, really interesting, you know? And I think that's an area as well there's going to be massive, because it's not perfect yet.
Yeah.
But that's an area where there's going to be massive development, I think, in the next few years.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
To be honest, I think the development of, like, robots going around the place that are sentient, that's a while off yet. Like, I remember that quote from Friends when Ross said, oh, you know, you can live on forever as a machine. That kind of crack, that's not going to happen now in the next, like, 5 years. Not a chance. But who says it won't happen in 40 or 50, you know?
And who were you inspired? Like, well, first of all, when you finish computer science, is that something you want to... You're currently doing data analytics.
I am.
Yeah, you know, you're doing that kind of stuff. But once you finish college, well, just to give some context, he's in first year and he's already in a good internship doing data analytics stuff. But what I was going to say, so when you finish computer science, like, do you see yourself going into artificial intelligence, or where do you see yourself going?
Well, the plan for the minute is, so I've gotten a really good perspective now of what work as a data analyst, data engineer kind of involves. Mm. So I think now what I want to see is what a more software development role involves. So, you know, I mean, even though I'd love to go back to AIB next summer, you know, maybe for third year, I might look into, you know, something in the likes of Microsoft or LinkedIn or something like that. But for the minute, the intention is to go on and do a master's in artificial intelligence and, you know, maybe even pursue that to an even higher postgraduate level. But yeah, for, I mean, in terms of a career, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if someone told me 2 years ago that I'd be studying computer science and working in a bank, I never would have believed them. I would have said, no, I'll be either a teacher or a doctor, you know? So, I mean, nobody really knows what the future is going to hold. So,
yeah, that's so true. You probably noticed yourself, but like most of the jobs out there haven't been created.
Well,
like,
exactly.
Right now, so, you never know.
I mean, if you think 15 years ago, people were not sitting down doing podcasts. I mean, radio was out, but I do, well, 15 years ago, okay, that's, see, I'm stuck in the time warp, but call it 20. Like 20 years ago, people wouldn't, like, people just didn't think, oh, you know, like, they didn't have the facilities to make podcasts, you know, and whereas this form of media now is almost overtaking the traditional media of TV and radio.
Oh yeah, 100% without a doubt. Yeah. And like, what the cool thing about podcasts is, because like, you're in control. Like, there's no people telling you, okay, you need to produce this way or that way. You are in full control of your own production, which I think is pretty cool.
Well, exactly. You have full creative license on what you're doing. Whereas if you were working for some radio station doing some regular talk show, I mean, you'd have to be completely compliant with all of their policies regarding what's controversial, what words to use on air, what you can say. Do you know, like, there's a lot of almost and you know what, it's almost self-imposed censorship, whereas that's completely absent in the likes of podcasting and doing YouTube.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm just curious to know, who are you influenced by the most?
Who am I influenced by?
Genuinely, you look up to,
like, this is the thing, I draw inspiration from like a lot of sources. Do you know, like, I draw a lot of inspiration from people in my own life versus, you know, celebrities and thinkers and all of that kind of thing. Like, my parents are really inspirational, so they are. So they'd be the main source that I'd look up to for, you know, like, advice about life and what to do. You know, I try to follow in their footsteps.
And what is it about your parents that inspires you?
Well, their work ethic is something else. Like, my mother and father, they work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, like, doing everything possible, and like, it's all for their kids. So like, I mean, you know, I really value their altruism and just their dedication, you know. And like, I think a lot of the time with, you know, really well known, like, a lot of people would say, oh, you know, my number one inspiration is like Steve Jobs or somebody like that. But the thing is, I don't know Steve Jobs. I don't know what kind of person he is in his personal life. Whereas I know, like, what great people my parents are and how good they are to everybody around them. So, yeah, no, they're definitely my number one inspiration. So they are.
I think that's really cool, the way you look, the people that actually know for inspiration rather than all these celebrities and...
Well, like, this is the thing. I mean, people now who'd be maddened to soccer and all of that, like, they'd obviously look up to the likes of Ronaldo or Messi. And, like, I mean, they have brilliant backstories, don't get me wrong. I mean, they're very inspirational. But the thing is, I don't know them. Like, I wouldn't know them to go out and have a coffee with, you know? So, no, I think in terms of deciding on role models for yourself, you really need to focus in on who... Well, like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a role model who you don't know. But for me, anyway, I prefer to have somebody who I've met and I know their deal and what they've done.
No, 100%, 100%. And I'm curious to know, where do you get your information? How do you keep up to date with the latest trends in AI, machine learning, data analytics, or just general information and news?
So before I started work, I mean, I was mad into social media, right? But to be honest, when you actually start working and, you know, you're living in a new place and all of that, I find you really become disconnected from social media. So in that regard, I haven't been getting much information from social media recently. But Wikipedia, I love Wikipedia. And I know Wikipedia has its haters out there and people who say, oh, there's no factual accuracy with it and all of this kind of stuff. But like, I mean, I think Wikipedia is one of the best sources of information out there.
Oh, 100%. And it's non-biased. Like, for
well,
example,
it's not biased. I mean, you have thousands of people there who are peer reviewing every single edit that goes on Wikipedia. Now, it has this stereotype that, you know, anybody can go on and edit Wikipedia, but they've made massive strides in reducing the amount of people going on and just writing complete nonsense on it, you know? So, yeah. No, Wikipedia. I just literally love to go on to Wikipedia and start on one article about something completely random and then end up someplace else, you know?
No, yeah, Wikipedia is great. And especially, I recently discovered this myself. There's like, if you type in Wikipedia current events into Google, it will give you news, like news in a flash, basically. It tells you like the top five news that are going on around the world. Yeah. And then it also summarizes what happened each day, which I think is so cool because like, there's, you know, most of the time we don't see news outside of Ireland or whatever, but like in Wikipedia, you see everything in the world, well, what's going on, all the important events.
It's great for insights about countries such as South America, well, like places such as South America and Africa and Asia, because there are places now that would get very little coverage on Irish media. Like even YouTube's another brilliant source of information. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, even last night I fell asleep to a video about the Hong Kong protests, like, which was fascinating. So like that, and that was something I wasn't even aware of, you know, and wouldn't have been made aware of it only for YouTube. So I think independent content is the way to go. So it is, because I mean, you know, not to sound very cliche, but fake news is a massive problem.
Yeah, definitely is. And how do you think you combat fake news?
Fake news is a tough one because we're living in an age of free speech. So I think the only way to combat fake news is to really research your sources and see the normal person, myself included. Like, we all live very busy lives. We don't have time for researching, you know, citing our sources for every piece of information we know. Like, we're not writing up research papers for a college assignment or anything like that. But, you know, I think if you read something that sounds very out there and not very plausible, you're better off just verifying it before you go around sharing it on Facebook. Like what I see a lot is, and this drives me, now I hate Facebook with a passion, I hate it, and I would delete my account only for the backlash I'd get from all of my friends asking why I blocked them. But you often see, now no offense to older people, but it's always the likes of my mother or my aunt or something like that, and you see these like chain posts: share this if you don't want Facebook to own your data, and share this to give notice to Russia that you don't want them taking over your account and stuff like that. I mean, do you know, that's what you call fake news at its finest. Because, I mean, Facebook own all your data anyway, no matter what you write on your wall, you know?
Yeah, and I also think there's no such thing as privacy anymore. Like, we're just moving into a world where, like, you're going to be exposed, like, no matter what.
Yeah,
you can't hide, basically.
No, we're living in a world of no secrets. Like, I mean, your photos, your web search history, like your files, everything's just a click of an engineer away, you know? Like, I mean, hacking now has become a massive problem. Like, I mean, you know, cyber threats have become so advanced now. The antivirus companies are just falling completely behind, you know? So I guess that relates back to the whole realm of computer science, like why there's such a demand for graduates in this day and age.
Yeah. And you said that you hate Facebook with a passion.
I do.
Can you tell us why?
Well, to be honest, I never really liked it growing up. I mean, it was one of them things I signed up for out of pure peer pressure, to be honest. Like, I mean, just everybody else had one, so I got one as well. And I always just could never see the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
As well as that, like, the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal, I mean, that was just... That, anyway, you know, I lost all faith in Facebook as a company. Now, I really do hope I don't end up working for Facebook in 3 or 4 years, because this is really going to come back and bite me in the ass.
Zuck, I hope you're listening.
But, Facebook, I just... And, you know, I'm an absolute slave to Instagram, like, and I hate being a slave to Instagram, but I prefer the platform to Facebook. I just find Facebook has become very dated. It's not suited to the needs of young people anymore. And I do believe Facebook is going to eventually go the way of Bebo and be no longer with us in about Bebo. Haven't heard that name in a while, probably.
Well, I don't know. Facebook is still huge. Like, it's
well,
huge.
It's still huge. And I mean, it is growing in certain, late adopting markets. Like, I mean, Facebook owns WhatsApp, you know.
And Instagram,
indeed. So, I mean, the corporation itself, Facebook, yeah, it's becoming massive. But,
the actual social media,
the actual platform, Facebook, I think it's lost so much credibility that eventually people will migrate to other forms of social media, as has already happened. I mean, Dom, you probably know this as well. Do you know many young people that use Facebook as their primary?
No, not at all. Like, they used to, but now it's just old people. Yeah, like, now when old people using it.
When I was like 14 or 15, yeah, I had a load of people on fucking Facebook Messenger, you know, and all of that. And you'd be sharing bits and pieces, and you'd be getting your 70 happy birthday wishes on your wall. Whereas now, I can't remember the last time I messaged someone on Facebook, you know? Like, it's just, I don't actively use it.
Do you not use Facebook Messenger? Because that's my primary source of messaging, yeah.
Yeah, no. I use WhatsApp and Snapchat.
WhatsApp, yeah.
Now, I'm a big fan of Snapchat. I'm addicted.
So what are your favorite social medias? We have Snapchat, we have Instagram. What else?
It would be a tie between Snapchat and Instagram. And if it's really beginning to show the circle I'm kind of hanging around in over the summer. But I do like LinkedIn as well. I think I like LinkedIn, you know, I just find LinkedIn more interesting than the other two. I mean, Instagram's just people posting pictures of themselves, you know, having a good time, and sure, I do that as well. And, you know, to a degree, there's a lot of falseness on Instagram, so there is, unfortunately. And look, everybody's guilty of it, I think. Whereas on LinkedIn, it's literally just everybody there is a professional, and, you know, everybody's just really interested in, you know, what's going on in other people's professional lives and all of that. So LinkedIn's great.
I also think that LinkedIn has become the next Facebook.
Would
you agree?
I do indeed. Now,
at the moment, maybe not at the moment, but a year or whatever ago, like, it used to be just, you know, purely business people.
Mm.
But now you see, like, you know, you see more people adding more connections. They're posting more. I feel like it's going to be the next kind of Facebook. It'd be like a Facebook.
No, I really do think that LinkedIn is on the up. Now, I think Ireland is a slow adopter of LinkedIn. I think in America, LinkedIn has become just, the growth has been exponential altogether.
Mm.
But in Ireland, it's just been a bit slow to catch on. But do you know what? Loads of people are on LinkedIn now. Like, I mean, I was shocked by the amount of people that actively use LinkedIn when I signed up for it. Like, I mean, I didn't have a LinkedIn account until I was required to make one by a college course I was doing. But the thing with it is, like, I mean, you have recruiters reaching out to you all the time. Like, it's a nice feeling, you know. There's a bit of gratification that comes along with it.
And you mentioned Cambridge Analytica and the way Facebook, you know, they exposed everyone's data.
Yeah.
But maybe that was just, maybe that's a story that we all know. Maybe other companies do that too. They expose our information, but we don't necessarily know about that. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, like, I mean, you know, major search engines have more information about us than we have about ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can imagine that in the databases of major search engines, that they can tell who likes, you know, if you're a vegan, if you have a certain disease, if you're, you know, what your favorite hobbies are. I'm sure that there's AI implemented there that can literally break down someone's entire personality and probably, you know, has information about people that people don't really know about themselves, you know, like about people's traits and what their likes are and dislikes. You know, it's all information that can be used and sold to third parties for marketing, you know.
I was gonna say something, but I forgot what I was gonna say.
Bad form.
I know, yeah. And what would you say is your most proudest achievement so far?
Well, my most proud achievement had to have been the Leaving Cert. Like, I mean, and that might be sad, but it really was. I mean, I wasn't expecting what I got in the Leaving Cert in the slightest. So yeah, that was a really great moment. So it was.
And if you don't mind sharing, could you tell us what you got in the Leaving Cert? And that'd be a good segue to go into my next set of questions.
So I got 6 H1s and a H2.
6 H1s and a, wow. Okay, that's pretty good.
That's not too bad. Could have done better.
And now, which is the main reason why I wanted to bring you on the podcast, is how did you achieve this? So what is your approach? How did you approach learning in school? Were you always the studious? Yeah. Could you describe the process of your own learning?
Well, I mean, from an early age, you know how people go through primary school and they're kind of told, oh, you're not a maths person. You're very artsy, or, you know, you're not really that academic. You're more sporty, or you're going to do stuff with your hands or all of that and all of that. I mean, I was always kind of told from an early age, oh, yeah, you're clever at school and all of that. So I think in that regard, it gave me the confidence required to view myself in a light that, okay, I can study and I can do well at this. So have I always been studious? I mean, in first year, see, what kind of happened was I didn't nobody goes into secondary school and thinks about studying, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, you literally just rock up there on the first day and you're like, oh, this is good crack, whatever. So kind of because I had that confidence, I was fit to do well in tests without doing a whole pile for the first while. And then I liked getting good results. Now, I know there's a lot of people who don't give a crap about numbers on a page and all of that. But no, I really liked getting high results. And then, you know, as the pace picked up, it did require study to maintain that level. So that's kind of where the studious aspect of my personality came from. It was just that, you know, I liked getting results and I'd started off that way. I want to continue that way. So in terms of how I managed to get what I got, I've always kind of understood how my brain processes information from an early age. So using that information, I kind of broke it down subject by subject, and I had different strategies for everything. So I did. And I think that's the key to doing well in any kind of exam, really, even college exams. It's figuring out what strategy works best for you and where to apply it. Because I think that's where the majority of people trip up when they're doing things like the Leaving Cert and college and all of that.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. They should find what works for you, what learning style works for you.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know, I want to dive into your strategies, your specific strategies that you used. Yeah. Like, did you block out a certain amount of time to study? Did you use the Pomodoro technique? Did you use the Feynman technique? I want to know how you actually approach your studying.
Right. So,
if you don't mind, sharing.
No bother. Oh, sure. Look, no secrets here. We're living in an age without secrets, man. Right. Now, I was very restricted on time because I used to work a fair few weekends, and I went to a school that was 45 kilometers away from where I lived. I think it was 45. So I'd have to leave the house at 7:30 in the morning, and then I wouldn't be home until 5:30. So I didn't have a whole pile of time for doing this. So every minute that I was dedicating to it, I knew I had to make it count. So the Pomodoro technique. Now, I did try that, but I always found that it was almost a distraction, if that makes sense. So the main thing I did was, in terms of organization, was so I used to always write down my goals for the week. And then I used to split it up into whatever days I wanted to do certain things. So I'd probably study about maybe two or three subjects a night. Like, I mean, certain things within those two or three subjects. And then what I do is I wouldn't set times on anything. I'd literally sit down and say, right, I need to get these three things done. I don't care if I'm here for an hour or I'm here till 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to get them done. And that was a great motivator to not waste any time, because, you know, the harder you worked in the short, you know, was the, like, it meant less time studying, you know, because I think what happens to a lot of people is, so they draw up these really colorful, beautiful timetables, right? So they go like, oh, you know, I'll do an hour of geography, I'll do an hour of maths, I'll do an hour of French. And see, they end up wasting half the time because they accomplished what they want to have accomplished in like no time at all. Like, I mean, if you want to learn how to write an essay in French, you can do that in 20 minutes. It's a great excuse then to spend the rest of the 40 minutes then doing jack shit until you move on to the next thing. So that's basically how I did it.
And yeah, just a second that, like with the way you said, you know, people schedule 1 hour to do this subject, 1 hour to do that subject. Now, I wish I knew this earlier because I wasted so much time studying aimlessly.
Mm-hmm.
But what was I going to say? There's a law called Parkinson's Law and also the Pareto Principle. If you combine them together, I think you can achieve like very good results in a very short period of time. Now, with the Pareto Principle, that is the 80-20 rule. So 20% of your work actually produces 80% results.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, so I would.
And Parkinson's Law is work expands with the amount of time that you give it. So for example, if you have an assignment, like many of us can actually relate to this. Let's just say you have an assignment and you have 6 weeks to do it. And majority of us actually get it done in the last 3 days when it's due. So if you initially gave yourself, okay, I'm going to give myself only 3 days to do this assignment, even though I have 6 weeks to do it, you can actually achieve that and get a very good result. And now if you combine that law, which is Parkinson's Law, and Pareto Principle, so only picking out the important tasks that you need to do, I think you can be so productive with your time. But what I wanted to ask you is, in relation to that, what about, like, how long did you study? Because you said you didn't have a lot of time.
Right.
But I'm curious to know, on average, how much time did you study? How much time did you actually spend studying when you were leaving CERN and so on?
Right. So now I don't really sleep. That's kind of one of my things. I don't really sleep. Yeah, no, not really. I know that's very bad, and I probably look like someone who doesn't really sleep that much. But
you look great, Joe.
Thanks for that, Dom. Thank you. Self-esteem going up through the roof. So at the start of leaving CERT, I have a tendency for burnout. That is one thing I will say. So, I mean, I didn't go crazy at the start of leaving CERT. I just kind of had my plan and I'd do whatever. Like, I'd do whatever amount of hours.
Is this sixth year we're talking about when you say sixth year? Okay.
This is sixth year. So I think I worked up until like the October midterm and then I scaled it way back. But on evenings, so I do like 2 hours, two to 3 hours in like, we'll say September to December. Then in December, I was like, right, we are locking everything down. The mocks are coming. The mocks are coming. Yeah, I know. I haven't even said the word mock in flipping year. Well, it's only been a year.
I missed that word.
but yeah, the mocks were coming. So I went like, I mean, I battened down the hatches. I was doing about 4 hours a night towards the, like after the Christmas tests. And then of course, like, I mean, I spent my days over the Christmas holiday studying. So I did.
Mm.
Now, with that being said, like, I never turned down a night out either. You know, you have to enjoy yourself as well, because your state of mind is so important when doing the leaving cert. Now, I'm not saying go to the local every night of the week, but I am a firm believer in not sacrificing, you know, your happiness over a set of exams, because that's not worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm going to go study off point, but I think, like, more... you know, there's so much pressure with the exams and leaving certain general mm-hmm. to achieve such good results.
Yeah.
And then when you really break it down, okay, why do you want to achieve these results? You wanna achieve good points because you want to go into a certain college. Mm-hmm. And then why do you want to go to college? You want to go to college because you want to get a certain job. Well, yeah. Most of us do. But then when you think about it, what happens if jobs stop requiring to have a degree? For example, like many multinational companies like Google, Facebook, they're not that keen on CVs and not CVs, and they're not that keen on your actual college degree. All they care about is your actual levels of proficiency of what you do. So what if a lot of companies start requiring degrees, and then there's going to be a lot less pressure to achieve such results?
Well, that's a really great point, Sodis, because I mean, even if you look at the bank that we are part of at the minute, like, not many people have, you know, they wouldn't have done their bachelor's in data analytics. I think out of all that I personally know, like, it's just myself and yourself. Yeah. I mean, the majority of people come from such, like, a real variety
physics,
of backgrounds.
Physics, psychology.
There's physics now.
Classical studies.
Yeah,
even.
Classical studies. Apparently, there's someone who does... I haven't met them, but apparently they're in it. Like, you come across people with economics degrees. I mean, there's a fellow in contact with half a veterinary degree. You know, like, you come across so many... Like, it's just such a different variety of backgrounds. But, where were we now with that? I'm after forget what was the point I was trying to make there. You're on about degrees, so pressure in terms of the leaving cert. Now I know with me, I was always really lucky in that I always had a great state of mental health. Like, I mean, I never really let things get me down. I mean, I always tried to have as positive an outlook as possible. Now, in terms of pressure, I did feel a lot of pressure, and it was pressure that I put on myself. Because, see, I got a decent junior cert as well. And then everybody was kind of like, oh, you'll get the 600 points. And, like, I did not believe for 2 seconds that I'd get that. I didn't believe it for a second. And everybody was kind of saying, oh, you'll get this, you'll get that. But it was always a pressure I put on myself. I always felt, like, almost expected to do well. So, like, I do believe there is massive pressure there, and it comes from sources that aren't intending to put pressure on people. And, you know, if you're not in a good, there's so many, like, it's a massive problem now, mental health, so it is. I mean, you know, and, yeah. Like, I mean, if, you know, you're at such a disadvantage if you're not in that state of mind, which many young people aren't, you know, you have to remember that. So,
yeah, and I like the way you mentioned mental health, because mental health and its relation to learning, which is the theme of this episode, I guess. Yeah. I think, like, when you're in a bad mental state altogether, it's very hard for you to absorb information and actually learn. So if you're, like, anxious about something, if you're worrying about something, it's going to be much more difficult for you to achieve good results. And a lot of times we think that this person isn't smart, but you never know what's going on behind.
No, you never do.
So you can never assume, like, this was something I was thinking about today. You can never assume what's going on in someone's head. You can't just, that guy is not smart. He can't study very well. Maybe there's some, like, you know, maybe he's thinking about something. Well, maybe she's thinking about something. Maybe there's, like, some sort of worry. Well, and it's causing them, you know, they can't absorb information as well.
Well, I know in the majority of cases of now, this is just in my own experience, but people who tend to say school isn't for me, there tends to be other underlying reasons there as to why their focus isn't fully on school. Or they either, you know, another aspect of it as well is the whole, some people don't want to be, you know, there's this desire to be a hard lad, like, you know, as well in the last second.
Fit in with lads, yeah.
Yeah, there's that. And, you know, they don't want to be seen to be a studier or to be a worker. Now, I couldn't really give a rat's ass. Like, I mean, you know, that's basic, like, that's just me. I like results and I like to do stuff. But in relation to the whole mental health angle on it, in nearly all the cases I've ever dealt with, there's always been either someone has been bullied, or they're insecure, or there's something going on in the family, and they just can't see, they don't actually have the capacity to focus on school. See, I was lucky in that I didn't really have, like, well, I don't really have any mental health issues. Like, I mean, my family's great. So I wasn't bullied either. So there wasn't a whole pile detracting away from focusing on, you know, doing my best in school. But whereas a lot of people wouldn't be so fortunate. So that's why the Leaving Cert really isn't a great indicator of somebody's intelligence or their, you know, their ability for success.
I'm actually so glad you brought that up, because yeah. I hate when people say, oh, that guy achieved, like, I'm not, you're yeah. you're a very smart guy. I'm not denying that, but I just want to say that, well, you know, like, a lot of times we think, like, if this person achieved over X amount of points, that guy's smart. If you achieve below X amount of points, yeah. you're not smart. I think that's such a absurd way of putting things, because, like, you never, like I said before, you never know what's going on in someone's yeah. head. Like, you had good circumstances.
Yeah,
and,
I had great yeah, circumstances. Exactly. You know, like, I mean, I didn't really have to deal with the adversity that, you know, I mean, you see, well, I mean, I even saw it in secondary school. Now, I went to a great, well, like, I mean, there was no bullying going on. It's well, not much anyway. Like, I mean, it was a small school in the west of Ireland. Whereas, you know, you read and you see these horror stories about people, you know, getting just horrific bullying, you know, horrific family circumstances. I mean, you know, what kind of chance does somebody have when they have four, like, multiple, you know, siblings that they're the parent of, their parents are, you know, involved in crime or something? What kind of chance does that person have? And, you know, if they get 300 points or 250 points, it's a brilliant achievement, because they've had to put up with so much more than somebody in, like, let's say, some random privileged area of Dublin who got grinds and tutors and private lessons and all of that crack throughout their career. Like, I mean, it's,
you can't compare them,
you just can't. So
yeah, no, that is 100%. Yeah. I'm glad someone who was successful in school admits that.
There is a tendency amongst people who the system works for. And I mean, I'm a person who the system worked for. You know, I'm not going to deny that. But there is a tendency amongst people there to kind of look down on people who, you know, couldn't achieve. Now, like, I mean, there are examples of people who, you know, had everything handed on a plate to them, and they just don't want to work, and they have no more. So, but, you know, in general, I like to really look at the bigger picture of people and, you know, see the entirety of their circumstances.
No, I think that's such a good perspective Such a good perspective. And, like, yeah, like, I hate the way, like, you know, when they think that you go to school, you go to college, and you get to go to the job, and that's it. Like, that's all you're learning done. But I think that's such a bad way of thinking about it. Like, learning should be a lifetime thing. And I think developing that eagerness to learn, like, whatever that may be, like reading articles, reading comic books, whatever you're into, but, like, just an eagerness to learn, I think that's crucial to have, especially in this day and age, the information age, because, like, there's so much information out there. We're
at such an advantage the people who came before us. But, you know, with that, you know, it's a double-edged sword, because I think we are, even though we have so much information at our hands, I really do believe that our generation is one of the most ignorant that there ever has been, you know, because I think there's a great tendency to literally think, oh, I can Google that. I don't actually need to retain this information, you know. So it's a double-edged sword. I mean, unless you actually have that eagerness to keep on learning stuff. But, like, I mean, a lot of people don't see the point of learning. Now, like, that's all fine and good. I mean, you know, different courses for different horses. But, you know, I just think it's so important to have a generalized knowledge of the world, because, you know, it allows you to understand things from other people's points of view, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, I'm glad the way you mentioned you can Google. So I was thinking about this the other day. And yes, you can Google all the information you want, but that's only going to give you fact. I think what's important for us is to, like, you no longer need to remember facts, I don't think, because you can just Google information, whatever.
Well, no, unless there's no, well, do you know what? There really never was a function of remembering that. Oh, I don't know. World.
Well, maybe
War
phone
II.
Numbers. Well, phone no. numbers back in the day, you know, but like,
but there never really was much point in knowing that World War II ended in 1945. Like, I mean, and that's a and you know what, we'll get to this later, but I want to talk about rote learning as well at some point, because I just think, you know, that's such a massive part of school. You know, it needs to be talked about.
Yeah. Well, going back on my previous point with the Google and retaining information, I think what's important now is just to be able to comprehend and understand difficult concepts, or just concepts in general, not just to remember these facts. Because like, when you think about it, like most of the stuff like you learn in school, you probably just forget a week later. It's all just cram. But if you have an ability to understand and comprehend actual concepts, I think that's going to help you so much. And then you can link, this is called meta-learning, I think.
Yeah, meta-learning.
Then you
yeah.
can link, like, okay, I learned this, this is similar to this. And you can kind of join different dots together, well, and you can retain information much better.
Well, you know, like, I mean, in terms of the science of the brain, I mean, look, the brain is composed of loads of neurons that are all connected to each other, like, you know. So, it's a very natural way to look at learning, but... that, you know, that just brings me back to the point where, you know, computer science, I think, is very much like that. Because once you understand a concept, like, I'm just going to use object-oriented programming as an example. Like, once you understand...
Could you just provide some context as to what object... Like, very simple example,
so,
maybe.
Like, so in some languages... You know, you just comprise a list of instructions, right? And the computer just follows each instruction line after line. In an object-oriented program, it's more focused on objects that try... So you create objects in the computer interface that, you know, resemble their equivalent in the real world. Is that a good explanation? I always find it very hard to convey what object-oriented programming is.
That's a good explanation.
Well, like, it's a fairly complex concept. Like, I mean, there's so many different parts to it, you know, classes, abstract classes, interfaces, all of that. But once you spend time understanding that concept in one language, that's it. You can apply it to every other one, you know? Like, once you learn about object-oriented programming in the likes of Java, you have it for Python, you have it for... what's another one, like JavaScript even has capacity for OOP, so you know,
OOP is object-oriented programming for those who don't know.
Sorry, we're mad for the abbreviations in the bank, so we are
let's keep it simple.
But yeah, so you know, like, it's really valuable to spend time, you know, trying to decipher complex high level concepts, because you know they're transferable. Like, you can try, you know, even something like, did you do biology for the Leaving Cert?
I did.
Photosynthesis, right? Mm. Like, I mean, I think about photosynthesis all the time when I'm doing algorithms, you know? Because that was the first, but photosynthesis was the first algorithm I'd ever.
Yeah.
Photosynthesis was the first algorithm I ever encountered.
Yeah.
You know? So, no, I think concepts are very... transferable, so they are.
No, yeah, 100%. Yeah. I agree with that. And you mentioned that you want to talk about rote learning.
Yeah.
So what is that? And wait, is that just like cramming information?
Yeah, that's literally sitting down and learning off sentences and essays word for word.
Right. Can you tell us some of the thoughts? Why did you want to talk about it? Like, do you hate it? Do you think it's good?
Well, no, I'll tell you, me and rote learning have a very complex relationship, we do, because it's something I can do really well, but, like, I think it's so flippin' pointless, you know? Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I could learn off, I mean, for geography, for the Leaving Cert, anybody who's doing it knows that there's 120 plus essays that you need to learn off, like, and, you know... learning that off word for word, who is actually going to pay you for your ability to learn off essays word for word? Like, where's that applicable in the real world, you know? So I just think it's so pointless, but it's a necessary evil, so it is. Like, I mean, you know, the thing with exams such as Leaving Cert and the Junior Cert is people like to resign themselves to the fact you know what, this is useless, what's the point? But you know, you can acknowledge that something's useless, but you still have to do it, because it's another step on the journey to get to where you want to go.
Well, leaving cert is good because it teaches discipline, teaches you how to, you know.
Like, for the discipline alone, I think it's still a worthwhile thing to do, without a doubt. Like, you have people who believe in dropping out of school. And look, that works for some people, but...
Unless you have a very good, valid reason to do so.
A very good, valid reason to do so. Now, if it's the case, you're dropping out for the sake of getting €100 a week from the government, which is what a lot of people... I would know have done, you know, I think that's not a really constructive reason to leave school. So I don't, because you have to remember there's people over in America paying tens of thousands of dollars a year to get an education, you know, in colleges. And I know it's not equivalent to going to secondary school in Ireland, but you know, if you just think of how much people value education and you just throw away your chance for free education for nothing, you know, for €100 a week, which is, you know what, it's not even that much money in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. It might seem like the world when you're 15 or 16, but when you have to rent a house, like when you have to rent a room in Dublin, it's not that much, you know.
Moral of the story, don't move to Dublin.
Yeah.
And actually, you want to talk about languages.
Yeah, I would like to talk about languages.
So, what did you want to talk about? Did you want to, like, how many languages do you know personally, actually?
So, yourself? I speak English, Irish, like, bilingually, and then I'd speak German and French to a great level. Like, I mean, my German's mad rusty. Like, I haven't spoken German now since I was, like, 14.
So, you speak English and Irish.
And French. And now, if I were to actually study German, I could get back to where I used to be, but I haven't spoken.
How did you approach learning languages?
So, I think there's a really, you know, there's a specific approach to learning languages. So, now, even though by my accent you might think I grew up with Irish, I didn't. So the part of Connemara I'm from, we don't speak Irish at all. It's like non, it's like anywhere else in the country. But I would live, like, I went to school in the Gaeltacht area. So basically that meant that, right, I was listening to Irish all the time in the hallways and in classes and all of that. But, like, I was an ordinary level Irish for the first year of secondary school, as were the majority of people who came from my region of Connemara. So, the key to learning, well, Irish anyway, I find, is sitting down and actually getting the basic vocabulary. I think what the majority of people lack is an understanding of the base vocab that makes up the language. Like, I mean, the majority of people, you know, they go wild trying to find out all of this really complex terminology for things like, oh, I don't know, music, like, what else are the really generic topics they make you learn about? Crime, drugs and alcohol, what else? Like, warfare, all of that, right? Mm. People really skip the boat. They try and learn these massive essays about, you know, the future of chemical warfare in Syria, and you know, they can't even tell you what their, you know, what breed their dog is and what their dog likes and what kind of house they live in, you know. So I think what's wrong with us in the whole realm of the Irish language is that we've made it far too academic, and you know, it's not practical enough, and that's why young people don't, well, I mean, in where I'm from anyway, there's a massive hate, like there's a dislike towards it. And that's why people don't want to speak it, because in school it's become too grammar focused, too academic, too, you know, impractical to their lives.
Hmm. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was reading this book and there's this guy who learned 4 different languages in a year, like fluency level. And what he did was he didn't speak English for that whole period of time. So he completely exposed himself into the culture, into the language, and he was very practical about it. And he wasn't afraid of, you know, making a fool out of himself. He literally just...
Well, by my German sample there. And we go on.
But yeah, like, I think the whole practicality aspect to it is so important, because, like, if you just... if you just learn like different vocab or different words and you're not connecting it, I think you're just going to forget. I think it's very important
I'll tell you now, I haven't spoken the Irish language in like properly in about 8 months. So, I haven't spoken it at all since I moved to Dublin, and I'm here now, nearly 16 weeks. So, I struggled with that. Whereas before, I used to be like, Irish was always on my mind, you know? Sometimes I'd find myself thinking in Irish without realizing it. So, you know, when you lose exposure to a language like that, you lose your ability to speak.
You know? No, yeah, 100%.
French was at a far better level when I was at school versus what it is now. Because again, I don't find myself in a situation where I need to speak French, you know? In my previous job, I was a waiter. So, often we'd have French monoglots who wouldn't be fit to order their food.
Huh.
So, I'd be called over by other members of staff. And I used to, I'd have to help in reception, do translations sometimes. So, having that exposure to the language, that really helped me. So,
that's pretty cool the way you had to do that. Such a practical aspect of learning a language.
Yeah, and see, this is the thing, right? Now, that being said, in my old school, and now if my old French teacher ever hears this, she'll know I'm hitting the nail on the head. There was more hatred towards French in our school than Irish. Far, far, far more hatred. And I have no idea why there was such enmity towards the French language. I mean, many, many people dropped it after the junior cert. Out of all the exams, it's fairly flipping easy. You can get a H1 in French much easier than you can get a H1 in geography, let me tell you that. You know?
Yeah, 100%. And I've looked into this, and you also work as a freelance web designer.
Well,
or developer.
Well, on my LinkedIn, I have that as kind of a placeholder.
Well, you obviously have some exposure to web design and
I've helped kind of my grandmother with her website and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a few side projects as well that I'm building slowly but surely. Now, the thing with web design is that makes it slightly, more inconvenient in comparison to the likes of, just developing something in Java, is the fact that you have to pay to put something up online. Now, thank God for PHP MyAdmin, because, it's great for actually seeing stuff in production, So, I'd have much more projects on web development only for the fact you have to pay for hosting and the domain name. So, web development's definitely an area I want to break into more this year. So it is, because I'm desperate now to come on a source of independent income.
Yeah, no, that's a good goal to have.
Yeah.
And going back to what we spoke earlier, you said that you feel, you put a lot of pressure on yourself.
I do.
In the Leaving Cert.
Yeah.
So when you feel overwhelmed or just stress in general, how do you tend to deal with that?
I don't think about it. I know. the thing is, I'm a firm believer. As you probably know from working with me, I talk a lot. The thing is, I don't really let myself get overwhelmed. What happens to a lot of people...
You smash the keyboard and work, all right?
Yeah. No, I really flipping take... No, you can tell when I'm stressed or I have a deadline coming up because of the way I fucking whack the keyboard.
Yeah, the keyboard is like, wow. Yeah. you just know it's you.
Yeah, no, everybody from around... I can just feel the eyes on me at work when I'm flipping... I need to get something done before 3 o'clock. But, No, essentially, I try my best to talk about, if I am feeling stressed or overwhelmed, I do try to talk it out. I'll tell a colleague, or I'll wait until I go home and I'll tell my ma. Shout out, ma. That's the thing. Some people I find, they like to do mindfulness and they meditate and all of that kind of stuff. And now, I'm not knocking that, but I could probably benefit from that kind of stuff because I am a very like I'm a person who's prone to stress, you know. So, but no, I just try to talk it out. You know, I think that's the key to anything, is a problem shared is a problem halved.
Talk it out. I like it.
Talk it out.
And what are your some of favorite books? Do you have any favorite books that you read, or just any books that have kind of helped
you? Now, this is very bad. I've told you this before, but I barely read. Like, I mean, the thing is, I always find I don't have time.
Well, you read Wikipedia.
Like, I read, but see, this is the thing, right? I find very easy to digest content digitally. But, like me, I have a John Grisham book now at home, right? Just a, you know, piece of a pop novel, right? And, like, it's staring at me on the desk. And, I mean, I've read his books before and I love them. But, you know, it's awfully hard to disconnect and sit down and read a book. You know, I don't know, I think there's, like, there's almost an attachment to your phone. It's almost like an internal organ, you know, and once you feel that you've put it down for too long, you almost feel out of control, you know? So, that's the reason why I don't read too many books. I mean, I probably should start, you know, but I don't know, I just always find it far easier to read stuff on different websites.
Hmm. Cool. And if you could have dinner with anyone at all, so alive or dead, okay, who would that person be?
Oh, I'll need a second now. I was listening to one of your podcasts there the last day. I had a feeling that the question was coming up. Oh, geez, I need time to think about that.
Well, whoever comes to mind initially.
Oh, that's so... You know what? I'd love to have dinner with Barack Obama. So I would. Because I think he has such an inspirational life story. Because at the end of the day, I mean, he was the first black president of the United States. He came up against, like, you know, there's massive prejudice, massive, you know, it was a very hard flipping thing for him to break into and to win, you know, the election of the United States. And, you know, he's an extremely educated, well-spoken, like charismatic person. I just love, you know, to understand better how, you know, what produced that person. So yeah, I'd say Barack Obama. Yeah, I find him very inspirational. Now, I'd say that's probably a very cliche answer to give, but there you are.
That's
because I think, you know, like in terms of the political landscape, I think Barack Obama made so many just monumental changes, like socially and economically in the United States. Like, he brought the country through, you know, a time of global economic hardship, and America now was on the up. Well, economically, we won't talk about it socially or politically.
But yeah, Obama's definitely a cool dude to have dinner with. I would love that myself.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I mean, I just think he's a real cool dude, and I'd love to get
inside. And he's so casual. Like, he just walks around in slippers. You know, like, he's just such a chill out.
You know what? He's very effortless.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, when you hear him giving a speech, even though it's very passionate and it's very, you know, it's a strong, like, you can tell what a strong-willed character he is. You know, it's still just, it's so natural and sincere and genuine seeming. So, you know, I find him very captivating when he speaks. So,
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. And Joe, where do you see yourself going in 5 years? This is the big question. Where are you going in 5 years?
I see myself on a beach in Thailand with millions and millions of euro in my bank account. Not a worry in the world. I know, I'm joking.
Drinking cocktails.
Exactly. You hit it on the head. No, in 5 years, that's a hard question. Probably I'll still be in education. I'll probably be doing some kind of postgrad, or I'll be traveling or something like that, or probably in some entry-level job in some software company, you know. I mean, the one thing working the summer has taught me is I really would like to give starting my own business a shot. So I would, because I just find that even though I enjoy, you know, work, you know, the security of having your paycheck in your bank account at the end of every month and all of that, like, I mean, I am someone who strives for independence. So, you know, I think I need to explore that option as well of starting my own business and seeing if I can make it that way.
Would it be a tech startup, or what are you thinking?
Definitely tech. I mean, tech is what I do best, you know?
Like, right, look out for Joe, the next founder of a social media platform.
Oh, feck's sake, it'll be another Cambridge Analytica situation, so well.
Yeah. What are we going to say?
No.
Oh, and I think it's a good time to wrap up the podcast. So before we actually finish up, is there anything out there that you'd like to say to the listeners?
Not in particular now, Dom.
No, that's the huge response. Well, so,
look, thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, Joe, it was a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for coming on.
And no bother. Yeah, anytime.
It was a very interesting conversation.
Well,
thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it'd be pretty cool if you shared it with your friends or anyone else who you think would benefit from it. You can find all the show notes by going to the website chasingpassion.ie. That is chasingpassion.ie. Thank you for listening today, and I hope you enjoyed the episode.